This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. With me this week are two amazing, fantastic human beings, Brian Murray.
Hello.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me this week. It's going to be an awesome week. I'm feeling like absolute garbage, and I'm hoping that you two are feeling better than me so you can carry the show and I can take a little bit of nap during the second half.
Are you sick?
Don't drink a lot, kids. That's what I'll just say right now.
I'll be honest, I'm hungover for the first time since college today. So
wow. All right. So we're firing on all cylinders this week. let me ask you guys a question I asked every single week. How have you been? How have comic books been? I guess we'll start with you, Kate. Maybe your energy will get me and Brian in the mood to be awake, I guess.
Oh, bad news. I've been physically life, ill.
Yeah. No, Kate. We're all dead this week.
This is bad. I read comic books.
Thank you. We're all going to go take a nap. Okay, how have you been, though? How have you been? How have comic books been? All that stuff.
I've been good. I've been feeling a little better, and classes started back up, and so getting back in the groove of normal schedule after having 3 weeks off. So I need a break to recover from break. You know what I'm saying? It was a busy break. I deserve a break. So I read some comics. A lot of what I read, I'm including stuff I read over break because this past week has been a little crazy. But I have been working on Black Hammer.
Ooh.
So this one, I think I talked before, Nick got these for me for my birthday, which is amazing because he's the best. And I had already read the first arc, but I couldn't remember what happened well enough, and I now had all of it to reread in digital without having to bust open my floppies. So I'm rereading the first arc to then read arc two, and it's as wonderful as I remembered.
Such a pretty book.
Right? That Dean Ormstrom. Nope, Ormston. There we go.
Yes.
He does amazing work on it, and it's just all around wonderful. I also have been reading Star Wars Legacy Volume 1. That's the 2006 Dark Horse run. I got that in that big Star Wars sale over the holidays. And it's different. You go into it, the only Star Wars comics I'd ever read are the Marvel ones, which are big budget, right? Put your best put your Jason Aaron on it and your best artists and all that stuff. Because we're Marvel and we have money and we just paid a ton of money for this, so it's going to work. Whereas, if you rewind and go to, the early 2000s Dark Horse stuff, it's we're not putting our best people on this. I mean, they're not bad. In fact, it's, for what it is, really good art. Mm-hmm. But it's very, very different than the Marvel runs. And so this series is about, you fast forward into the future by, I think, 100 years. And the Sith have conquered the Empire, and the Jedi are all scattered again, and the galaxy's again divided and at war in a shocking turn of events. And so there's Cade Skywalker, who's the last Skywalker and, heir to the legacy. So he has to figure out how to be an awesome Jedi. And so far in my reading, he's not awesome or Jedi yet. He's maybe Jedi. I don't know. But he's getting there. But it's if you go back to old Dark Horse. Oh, it's not even that old. But where every dude has 0% body fat and there's no such thing as a woman without a big chest.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? I'm why are there so many veins in this Star Wars universe? So
Star Wars becomes completely veins.
Yeah.
Fast forward 1,000 years and it's just veins. Yeah, right? That's all that it is.
Yeah.
I will point out, Kate, that 2006 was 12 years ago.
It's not that long ago. That was
That's more than a third of my life ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange. Anything in the 2000s doesn't feel that long ago to me. So,
yeah, I mean, I was graduating high school that year. But
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was in college, so... I also have been rereading I Kill Giants for our Goodreads Book of the Month discussion.
That's unsarcastic hell yeah.
Right? It is one of my all-time favorite graphic novels and completely perfect in every way.
Yeah, so, such a good pick by Danny and Philip. I'm so glad that they were they immediately knew what they wanted to read, because I think that book's been nominated for the Book of the Month like a dozen times at least.
Right? I know. And I always want it to win, and it never does, so I'm really glad they picked that. And then my other reread has been Batwoman. I went to try and read issue 7 and realized that I hadn't finished the first arc. So I reread Batwoman number 3 through 6, which I think only 6 was not a reread. I think, but you know, it was long enough ago, I don't really remember. Like, you know that feeling when Comixology says it's been read and you're like, has it been though? Like,
oh, yeah.
I have no memory of this. Yeah. So this is Marguerite Bennett writing and Steve Epting on art for 3 and 4. And then Stephanie Hans is on issue 5. Please never give me anything but Stephanie Hans Batwoman ever again. It's the most beautiful, perfect thing. And then 6 is Eddie Barrows, who, after Stephanie Hans, anyone wouldn't look great. But he's also not, I don't like as much as Steve Epting's art, so that was a little disappointing. But the big thing is, like, issue 6 is a big what the fuck. Because it's a Detective Comics tie-in that makes zero sense if all you read is Batwoman. And there's no, like, preface saying, like, this is a totally different thing. And so you just pull it, like, with your regular comics like I did, and then you get this issue and you're like, and that's why I had stopped reading, it turns out, is I got to that and I was like, what the fuck? And it's okay. Like, fast forward into the future, Batwoman's, like, at war with Batman, who's become, like, taken over Gotham and this and that. It's very strange. And it's, like, the perfect example of a poorly done event. The event itself was the fall of the Batman, which was for Detective Comics, but the issue for Batwoman is a huge waste of money and really frustrating if all you're reading is Batwoman, because it, like, makes no sense, and there's no issue 8 goes right back to the norm, or sorry, issue 7 goes right back to the normal Batwoman storyline that was happening in your comic before that. So it's just this one issue that's completely out of context and has no resolution unless you go buy Detective Comics. And I was just like, that's what a huge waste of money.
Ugh. That's how they get you.
Well, the joke's on them, because I'm not reading Detective Comics. It was not a good enough, like, thing to make me want to go buy more stuff. But, gotcha. Yeah. So that's about where I've been.
Well, good. I mean, it sounds like you at least read some good comics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mixed in with some disappointing
Just that one
comics.
Issue. Everything else gotcha. Was good.
Cool. Brian, what about you? How have you been? How have comic books been? What have you been up to? All that jazz.
I've been good. Now that the new year has kicked in, I'm starting to get a lot of job interviews lined up. So that's exciting.
Hooray.
Nice. Nice.
Every has started hiring again. For comics, I haven't done a whole lot of reading lately. I did pick up Dark Fang number 1 after listening to Tia talk about number 2 on last week's episode. And I saw that number 1 was only $2 on Comixology, so I picked it up, gave it a read. It is every bit as good as Tia made it sound. It's just
Is this the vampire climate change book?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it starts with her, like, climbing out of the ocean, and it opens on her killing this guy who is basically watching, like, a cam girl porn show on his phone and being, like, fascinated by this token economy that apparently these things have. And so she decides to become a cam girl because vampires got to make money. But she basically just, like, sits in front of the camera and uses her vampire powers to mind control people and just, like, takes all their money and then makes them set themselves on fire.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's what I would do if I had mind control. So, I also read, it's funny that Kate's reading old Star Wars. I was reading new Star Wars. I missed the official Star Wars title as the new Marvel comics all came out. And so my library's Hoopla app recently got access to some of those. So I went back and read the first 2 volumes. Volume number 2 was my favorite just because it introduced us to the planet or the moon of Nar Shaddaa, which is called the Smuggler's Moon in a lot of the old canon stuff. And that was always kind of like one of my favorite places in Star Wars, because it was imagine the Mos Eisley Cantina, but planet sized. And that was Nar Shaddaa. And so it's always just been this, like, this teeming mass of, you know, hundreds, thousands of different species, you know, different languages being thrown out all over the place. And it's also kind of a rough and tumble place where bad things happen to good people. So I really enjoyed getting a chance to really see that. And the illustrators on these issues, Stuart Immonen and Simone Bianchi, both did a great job of kind of bringing this planet to life. Jason Aaron is on writing for this. As Kate mentioned, you put your Jason Aarons on Star Wars. And they sure did. My favorite thing in this was, and I might misremember the name. I think it was Gracchus the Hutt.
Yeah. Yep.
Who's just like, he's a hut, but he's like a big muscly hut, which I thought was really cool. And he walks around on these like cybernetic spider legs.
Oh yeah, such a fucking cool character. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It's one of those things where I saw that and I was like, oh, I mean, of course there would be huts who did something like that. They're not all just gonna sit around on sleds like Jabba did.
Right.
And then I was like, that name sounds so familiar. Is he in something else? And it turns out he is. He's in Poe Dameron. There's an arc in Poe Dameron where he has to break into like an ex-Imperial super prison.
Mm-hmm.
So in this Star Wars book, we see Gracchus being arrested by the Imperials. And then in Poe Dameron, we run into him in this prison. And Poe has to like deal with him. Yeah.
Oh, that's so... I haven't read the Star Wars series, so that's super cool.
Yeah, it was really neat to have that tie and be like, wait a minute, I've seen this slug before. Yeah, other than that, you know, I've been just trying to keep up on TV. You know, we've had a lot of comics TV coming out with Runaways and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mike? What you been up to?
Oh, you know, I made a big, huge statement on Twitter that I was going to cut some books from my pull list. So I've been studying that. Figuring that out. But I did read a bunch of comic books as well. I read Grass Kings number 1-6 because Nick spent like an hour crying to me about how no one ever wants to read this book and he never gets to talk about it. And so he wasn't crying by any means. He was just saying, he's like, God damn it, I just want this to be, you know, a book that a lot of people read and talk about. And I was like, okay, well, I'll read it and you and I can have a big, huge mini-sode discussion about it. So I read 1-6. So Nick and I can record a mini-sode this week.
That is
and
a great series.
And it is. It's a really cool series. Like, the first six issues, it's a good mystery book, I'll say that. It's got a lot of mystery to it. Because there's some stuff in there that I didn't catch the first time I read the first four issues. And then upon the second time reading and then getting 5 and 6, I was like, oh man, he like lays some plot lines very early on in the first issue that you just think are throwaway lines. And it turns out they're much bigger than that. I really appreciate mm-hmm. that about the book. This is Matt Kent and Tyler Jenkins. If you haven't read Grass Kings, I think we've talked about it quite a bit on the show. And we will be doing a whole mini-sode about that. But it's essentially about a small patch of land somewhere in the United States where these people live in a lawless... They live in their own little kingdom, they call it, that doesn't really adhere to the local law, or the state law, or the federal law. They're just like their own kind of, you know, law system or whatever. And they're ruled by this guy who's a king, quote in heavy quotes there. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's kind of a question of why are all the people that live in this city living there? Not everybody's going to have a nice, clean past. You don't just go live in some non-regulated area that has like a weird feudal system for no reason. So it's really cool. It's a really cool book. I will say that. Tyler Jenkins' art is fantastic.
I'm going to go on a limb here and wager that it's a lot of white people who set up this lawless kingdom.
No, it's actually a mix. Mix of some Native Americans, some other people of colors. Like, no, there's no like direct tie to say like, oh, there's an Asian person. You know, it's nothing like that. It's a mix of white people and non-white people throughout. It's got some ties back to, I think, some Native American history. Again, I don't know any more than, like, we haven't seen a lot of character study in this mm-hmm. book, and apparently the next arc gets into that, like, focusing on a couple characters in the Grass Kingdom, talking about why they're there, and maybe seeing a little bit about their past. So I look forward to reading more of this book, because it kicks ass from that point of view.
I just know that if they didn't have white people, they would have rolled in the tanks by now.
We'll see. Oh, see, that's the whole first arc. is talking about how the city that this kingdom resides in, as far as the United States is concerned, how the police really don't care for it because they think that there's a serial killer that lives in their midst and that they're hiding him, and that, you know, these people don't care about the law, so they break the law all the time and all this stuff. And it kind of like points at the way that, you know, like this ongoing fight between, you know, the man and the regular people, about how like it feels like the government's kind of trying to keep you down. But they make a great point at one point in the first six issues to talk about, like, you know, when you need the law, we have to be there for you. But when you want to disobey and you don't want to follow the rules, then you yell at us for, you know, encroaching on your property and stuff like that. And so there's some commentary in there about all of this. And I think Kent does a good job of trying to be objective in his writing and giving characters different voices to argue with each other about those various topics. I mean, there's clearly you know, one person's overstepping their bounds and, you know, people have like personal vendettas against other. And so they use what power they have to damage the other. But yeah, it's, again, there's a lot that goes into this book, and that's why we're going to do a whole minisode, because I think that there's a lot to unpack with this book.
Cool.
Cause it's, you know, it's not capes. It's just like regular people.
It's
always fun.
The really important key point, though, is Tyler Jenkins' watercolors.
Yeah, Tyler
Jenkins' work. That's all you
need to know. And I'll go into this more on the minisode, but Tyler Jenkins, you wouldn't... Like, he also did work on Snowblind, which we talked about.
Yep.
But I didn't recognize this as being the same guy who did the art on Peter Panzerfaust at first. And if you read Peter Panzerfaust, and I talked about this in the Snowblind episode, but if you read Peter Panzerfaust and you look at the art and then you read Grass Kings, there's no way in hell you could really tie those two together unless you like sat them side by side and went, oh, holy shit, this is the same penciler. This is the same person doing the art.
Yeah.
It's so impressive to see the range on this guy.
His faces are kind of similar in the two.
Yeah.
But his work does look a lot different when he's the one coloring it.
Totally. Otherwise, the other stuff that I read, I also read Runaways number 5, read that this morning. Fucking love this book. Rainbow Rowell, Chris Anka, Matt Wilson, Joe Caramagna. Like, oh my goodness, this book is so fantastic. And we're finally ramping up, fighting some bad guys, kind of. There's this perfect moment where Chase jumps into a room and he's got Victor Mantra's head strapped to his chest. And the faces they're making, it's the funniest thing I've seen in a very long time. So I really appreciate what Chris Anka is doing with the art. I love following him on Twitter and hearing him talk about his process and showing like character costumes per issue, because he really spends time trying to make these people look like unique individuals, and you can totally feel it when you're reading the book. And Matt Wilson's colors are just phenomenal. Like he's a top tier. He's top tier colorist as far as I'm concerned.
Are they making it match the show?
I have no idea. I haven't watched the show yet.
No, this is basically like a couple of years in the future of the original Runaways canon, whereas the show is wildly divergent from the original Runaways. I think it's still good.
Right.
But
which we're going to talk about. So yeah, that great book as always. Let's see. I also read Sleepless number 2, which was Tia's pick last week. Holy fucking shit. This is the greatest fantasy comic you can read right now. That's all I'll say. It's gorgeous. Lila Del Luca's art, just holy shit. I can't even get over how fucking awesome this book is. And we're two issues in. And there's so much world building. I love it. Finally, I did read Redlands number 1 through 4. I realized I was a couple issues behind, so I was like, I'll just reread the whole book because I wanted it to be fresh in my mind. This is Jordi Belair and Vanessa Del Rey. The book is really all over the place. Like, Redlands is about these witches who live in this city called Redlands, Florida. And they, in the first issue, which seems to take place in the past, and you find out later it takes place in the past, they essentially kicked out the old police and they become the police of the city. And what's interesting is they're three witches, the three main characters whose names I can't remember, but they're like Ro and... I can't remember their names, so I won't try to just butcher them. But they become the police of the city, so they investigate all this stuff. But in being the police, it allows them to look into supernatural things and cover it up as it was regular police work. Or, you know, if something bad happens and they kill somebody because they, you know, were a monster or whatever, they can get rid of the body and stuff like that. So they're kind of manipulating the law in their favor, but ultimately trying to be good and protect the people of the city. Of course, a handful of people know that they're witches, and because of that, it becomes a whole thing. So, having read the first four issues, I think issue five is out and six is coming very soon. This book is still pretty solid, even though the story is a little bit all over the place. But by issue four, I think things start to come back together from like this chaos of plot lines, focusing in on a single plot line to drive the story further. But adding little crumbs of things for future storylines, which I appreciate. I think Jordi Belair is doing a fantastic job. I don't know why I would have ever doubted her, but you know, she kind of like kicks ass in comics in general. So I, you know, her writing should be no surprise that it's just as good as her coloring.
So I want to hear about this massive call you did.
Oh, yeah. So I made this, on Twitter I was talking about how, you know, it's kind of annoying that we read comic books simply because, you know, for instance, I was reading X-Men Blue, and I'm kind of like reading this book thinking, I know Jean Grey, the young Jean Grey version, she dies so that the old Jean Grey can come back. And so reading X-Men Blue was kind of like, this all feels really pointless because I already know what happens.
Yeah.
I already know that Jean Grey goes away. And so I was talking about how, like, I just need to cull all the books, pull the books out that I don't enjoy reading. I'm only reading because I am. Like, they're on my pull list, so I keep reading them. Or you're 20 issues in, and you're like, well, I might as well keep reading. I already read 20 issues.
Right.
And so I sat down, I think this was on, like, Tuesday or Wednesday I said this. And then that night I went home and I made a list. I had pulled up my spreadsheet of all my all of my comic pulls, and I like they're all set up where like I have a column that says, are you going to drop this, yes or no? And so I set up all the ones that I want to drop, and then I slept on it, and I woke up the next day and I looked at the list, and then I added more to the list, and it ended up being like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 books that I dropped.
Wow.
Because like I'll tell you, some of the books were, I dropped Exo Manowar, I dropped Poe Dameron, I dropped X-Men Blue, Archie, Punisher, Outcast, They're Not Like Us, Animosity, and Curse Words. And there's a lot of reasons why I think why I dropped in each individual one, but I think ultimately my thought was, am I going to miss these books? Because I think right now a lot of them are chores. Like, I see them on my list and I go, oh, I got another issue of this book that I need to read. And it's interesting because some of them, like Archie or Poe Dameron or Animosity, and I just talked about this, I think, in terms of Animosity, but all these books are books that I go, oh, I got another issue of this, and I go, oh, okay, I guess it's time to read it. And I read it, and I always go, yeah, that book was really good, but that feeling fades very, very quickly,
yeah.
And I'm never looking forward to another issue of that book. And so I figured I'd drop them, and if I want to get back to them in the future, I can always try to get them on discount. Because, like, these are all digital books.
Right.
And so if I want to get back into these books, I can get...
Yeah,
it makes it so much easier. So if I want to get back into them, I can always just go buy them on a super sale or wait till, you know, there's a big SDCC sale or, you know, Emerald City or whatever convention's going on. There's always a big sale around that time. And I can just pick up the back issues for a buck each rather than pay up front. I realize, like, kind of goes against a lot of what we were talking about. We talk about on the show about pre-ordering and buying books that, you know, deserve, that need the counts. And I think books like Animosity definitely do. But should you be buying books simply for the sake of, I think that this, you know, this creator deserves this book? Because I don't think that there's anything wrong with Marguerite Bennett's writing. But I just like that book. I think I would like it more if it was in a collected format, or I'm reading, you know, 5 or 6 issues in a row, because then the momentum will stay and I'll feel like really, really into the story. Whereas month to month, I don't really feel that way.
Yeah, that book in particular reads much better in trade.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm kind of torn because this is what always prevented me from dropping books in the first place. Is it's like, you know, I don't want this book to get canceled, but I don't want to read it right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you have limited funds, and if you're spending all your money on stuff you're not excited for, it very quickly stops being exciting to get comics at all. Like,
yeah.
I've definitely had that point where on my pull at times where I'm like, I need to just do a big shakeup because I am no longer excited to go down on Wednesdays. So, I don't know. Like, we've been talking on the Goodreads group. There's a discussion thread going right now about our favorite comic books of 2017. And that got me thinking about the same kinds of things. Like, what was I really into and still feel great about from last year? And, like, what were other people really into that maybe were off my radar that I should look into, and like maybe like you were saying, on a sale you can get a lot of this stuff, or from the library for a lot of these now are old mm-hmm. enough to get a trade or two. And I think that's a good point you made, where like a lot of stuff it'll be fun to read in the moment, but only sort of, and then that fades very quickly. And at that point, like, why am I purchasing it?
Right. And I it's weird because I don't want to not support some of these creators, but I don't know. Like, do I really owe them like my money simply because I want to support them? I think I'd much rather spend my, you know, $2 or $3 a month, or $3 or $4 a month, more likely, like backing a Patreon where I just get some stuff. Say like, hey, I like what you do. Just keep it up.
Right.
Keep up the good work.
I agree, and that's also. I mean, obviously, our comics budgets are different, and for me, if I'm getting certain things, that means it's definitely to the exclusion of other stuff. And I think there's something to be said for supporting the stuff you want to read, not just like, so like supporting good comics, or like really good. Well, you know what I mean? Like compelling comics. Like I don't know. That's hard.
Well, I mean, that was part of the thing that I said. You know, it's like I want to just read good comics this year.
Yeah,
I'm going to cut the stuff that I think is okay. And I want to read books that make me excited.
Yep.
And unfortunately, some of these books were in that boat. And I don't mean to like disrespect anybody by dropping these books and saying like, oh, I dropped your book, and because I'm not going to throw that in anybody's face. But unfortunately, that's what happened because I was not excited by the book. And yeah, I think it goes back to you should just be reading books that excite you. So that's where my pull list culling happened. And at this point, I'm still thinking I might drop another handful of books because, like, my list is big and it's full of books that. But the thing is, my list is also big, but it's full of books that are like miniseries. So,
oh, I see.
For instance, you know, I've got like the Batman/Shadow crossover event.
Yeah.
I wasn't really into it, but I got 3 issues in and there's only 3 issues left, so I'm just going to buy them all.
That was me with Death of X. I'm like, God damn it. There's only two more. Yeah. You got halfway through.
And then you're just like, shit. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to be losing a bunch of books in the future anyways, and that's nice. And maybe I'll just, you know, instead of buying more comics, I'll just not pull anything new and just read all of the fucking back issues, because I know that I've bought so many books over the last year and a half that I haven't read, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I should read all of Authority. That's a whole thing. Anyways, so let's talk about
what we are going to read. You know,
what we are going to read, and we are excited about this upcoming week. So, Brian, let's start with you, because what the fuck is this?
So my pick for this week is Ice Cream Man number 1.
Okay.
Coming out of Image Comics. It's W. Maxwell Prince and Martin Marazzo on this book. The way it was described to me is that it's kind of going to be like a series of one-shot issues that are going to be about like the ways in which people's lives are awful. And then there's this kind of like I don't know if he's like some kind of trickster god or something, but this ice cream man that sort of like binds it all together or something. I really have no idea.
And that's exciting.
But it's Image, so I'm willing to take a chance on it. Like,
sure.
Because if somebody told me about, you know, a book about pop star gods that are all going to be dead in 2 years, I would have thought that was weird as hell too. But
mm-hmm.
I picked it up and I'm still reading it. So
right.
Maybe I can take a chance on Ice Cream Man. And if it's bad, then I just won't keep reading it. But
I hope it's good, simply because the cover, like, if you Google Ice Cream Man, a couple weird things come up, period. But this book does happen to come up in the list, and it looks kind of creepy, so it's exciting. Yeah,
the description I've got here is chocolate, vanilla, existential horror, drug addiction, musical fantasy. There's a flavor for everyone's misery.
All right.
So I was like, yeah, okay.
Let's do this.
I'm in.
Cool. That's cool. Kate, what are you excited for this week?
I'm excited for Batwoman number 11. Now, disclaimer, the most recent issue I've read is number 6. So, like, don't at me if this arc is bad. But it according to Amazon, is the end of the second arc, according to their info for volume 2 of this series, which has the wrong artist listed. So who knows if this is actually the last issue, but it makes sense, sort of. Just count-wise, it would make sense.
Okay.
Kate Perkins is writing instead of Marguerite Bennett for some reason. I don't know. Kate Perkins is on 11 and 12, and then Marguerite Bennett's back for 13. Tinian stopped assisting at number 6, so he's not on this arc at all. Scott Godlewski, maybe I'm butchering that, I don't know. But he's doing art instead of Fernando Blanco, who took over from Epting at number 7. So Fernando Blanco's on the rest of the second arc. And he's also back with number 13. So it looks like maybe 11 or 12 will be their own little thing.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm excited because I want to read the entire second arc all at once. And so I want this to come out so then I can sit down with all of it and just do a straight read through. And it'll be interesting to see what it's like with different artists and potentially some different writers in there and all that. So.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, for me this week, I'm excited for Kill or Be Killed, number 15. My pull list is surprisingly small. I don't really know. League of Comic Geeks is weird. Now that I've been switched over to them, I don't know.
Oh, we need to talk about that. I need to switch too.
There's a whole thing. We could talk about that after the show or something. But anyway, so Kill or Be Killed, number 15, is out next week. This is from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, Betty Breitreiser on colors. This is a new arc. Dylan has to confront the demon that is within him, or is it within him? Maybe it's in his head. Maybe it's actually a demon. This is a solid book every single month. So if you haven't been reading Kill or Be Killed, the premise is a 20-something kid at some point starts to... In New York City, he sees a demon, this demon comes to him and says, I can make your life better, but all you have to do is kill one person a month for me. So he starts doing that. And then he says, I can't do it, and tries to put off killing someone. And after a month, he becomes deathly ill. And so in this deathly ill state, he's like, all right, maybe I do have to go kill someone. So he finds this criminal, kills the criminal, feels better the next day. Totally fine. And he feels better than better. So as the story progresses, we learn more and more about Dylan, about his family, about his relationships, about his father. His dad used to be an artist and he drew a bunch of stuff. Maybe it's tied to this demon. There's a whole other like thing with the Russian mob. So of course, as you start killing people in mafias and big organized crime families, I guess that's the natural thing. And, the story gets complicated. So issue 15 is the beginning of a new arc, where the cover is Dylan, the main character, in his red mask that he wears when he kills people, in a straitjacket. So I'm really interested to see what happens, because this book kicks ass, and it has since issue 1. Every issue, like, this is one of those books that I really, really, really look forward to every month. Not only because it's an Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips joint, but also because the story is really good. And there's a lot of really cool stuff in the back if you're into Pulp Fiction and things like that. There's a lot of really cool essays that only show up in the single issues, and they make that disclaimer on every issue. So, good stuff coming. I'm excited. I think the first two trades are out for this book, too. So if you're interested, you can definitely go find those for pretty cheap. I'm certain that the first volume, like a lot of popular Image trades, is only $10. So
it is.
$10 for 5 issues.
Because you guys have talked about this so much on the show, I was like, I'm going to pick that up. And I'm going to pick that up in digital. And then I forgot I had gotten it in digital trade and went and got it in physical as well. So now I have 2 copies.
So but I've never read it. Kate is a diehard fan.
Never read it, but I unintentionally purchased it twice at this point. So
very nice, very nice.
And that's comics.
Yep, exactly.
What up? Womp, what up? Womp. For our show this week, we are talking all about retcons, when they work, when they don't work. What it means to be a retcon, when retcons work in TV, when they don't, all that kind of stuff. So we've got a definition. We're going to start this episode as if we actually did some research, and Kate did. Kate opened up some listicles. She read goddamn Wikipedia. This is some serious business here. So let me define a retcon for all of you really quick. A retcon is, according to Wikipedia, A retroactive continuity, or retcon for short, is a literary device in which established facts in a fictional work are adjusted, ignored, or contradicted by a subsequently published work which breaks continuity with the former. So, when does this work? When doesn't it work? What kind of stuff do we love and hate about comic books that do this? I mean, outside of the big two, I don't think this happens very often, unless we're talking like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or, you know, like these big, huge franchises that are out there. I'm sure Transformers has a lot of this. If you've read a lot of Transformers, the old Star Wars continuity probably breaks up a lot of this, especially when the prequels came out and probably contradicted a bunch of garbage that had been written in comics. So my personal opinion is that retcons are tough. Brian and Kate, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot, like, even in things that... So it depends on how you talk about retroactive continuity, right? So some of the stuff that I think you see that's not capes is updating things to match technology, like to match the reality when they were predicting stuff that then didn't come to pass, you know what I mean? Or is just different. So like there's things like that, but that's not usually what people think when they think retcon. They think like a pretty dramatic like resetting of the story and changing major things. And so, yeah, I mostly think capes with it. Star Trek did this with their new movie universe, and I thought they did it really well. But it is a tough one. But I think it's often necessary with these big, long things that become really cumbersome or outdated, or we now know better than some of the things they were doing. So you can use it to update and improve stories, but also give yourself somewhere to go with them, which I think is good, although sometimes it's upsetting. Like, obviously, people get really upset about them if you like the way things were.
Right. And when you've got, like, 40 years of continuity that you have to work with, you know, we get these retcons simply because, you know, it's out of necessity or, like, an updating or something. You know, for instance, I think, like, one of the things that I always think about was, or that I that first came to mind for me, I guess, for this episode was in the show Gifted, you know, it's X-Men show. It's got a lot of characters that actually exist in the X-Men universe, which I fucking love. But for instance, one of the characters, Blink, is in the show. And I don't know if they call her Blink. I can't remember.
I don't think she's Gifted. Officially been called Blink yet.
Okay, so, but nonetheless, it's the character Blink from the X-Men, and Blink only exists in the Age of Apocalypse universe, so already we're kind of, like, getting out of the weird, we're pulling on the weird, like, X-Men line to say, like, okay, hold on, let's figure out these specific technicalities, but nonetheless, in Gifted, Blink, she opens portals with her mind, and she controls them with her hands and all this stuff, but if you watch the X-Men Days of Future Past movie, or if you read any books that feature Blink, you know that she like throws these red jewels out and they hit against reality and open portals, which I already like we're already in weird territory with that, but the fact that they changed that for the show probably to make it a lot easier to do and to for the actor to actually try to do something, it works. I consider it like a retcon because it's the same character, but yeah, it works, but it's not the original character. And everyone should go read the series Exiles, which is like a 16-volume X-Men story that you don't need any real X-Men knowledge to read. It's fucking amazing. But that's
only 16 volumes.
Only 16. But it's about like dimension hopping X-Men like teams that are forced to go fix other universes because this alien race broke them. It's so good. It's so good.
So that seems like a really common reason, though, like that you were talking about for the X-Men show is like that accommodating what you want to have happen in the future. So you change things to make it either work for film for a different medium or to make it so that you can do future storylines with a character. So like bringing back characters that were dead, like one of the ones that ends up on all these listicles I was reading is the Jean Grey isn't really dead because she died in X-Men 137. But then they're like, oh, that sucks. We like Jean Grey. Bring her back. They did the same.
I mean, in her character, I mean, you think about it. She's called the Phoenix, right? She's dealing with the Phoenix Force. It's all about rebirth. So, like, if you think about it, Kate, listen to me. If you think about it, it actually all makes sense.
This is how
someone in the writer's room justified it.
But I mean, they did that with Swamp Thing. Like, Moore's Swamp Thing run was the same thing, where to tie it up the original Swamp Thing, he dies. And so they're like, well, that sucks. We need more Swamp Thing. So they brought him back. But then there's that big retcon of he's not actually Alec Holland. He's like the swamp came to life and just the swamp thinks he's Alec Holland. It's very strange. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that also was to do with the like film and all that stuff. And then like Vision's originally the Vision was the old Human Torch, which was like an android thing, gets turned into Vision. But then they're like, well, damn, we miss Human Torch. So they're like, never mind. Yeah. Vision's just his own thing. And so we can have Human Torch again. So I feel like that happens a lot. Like, I'm sure there's like dozens of other examples where you're like, oh man, we missed that character.
Well, I think that we see more retcons from things in the past where there's like this established thing in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And then later in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, they're like, well, did that actually happen? And then they gaslight the shit out of you, right? Like,
right.
I never thought about it in those terms before, but man's not wrong.
I mean, so it's something that I, you know, it's making up for past storylines that kind of put things into a dead end, which is why we don't see a lot of dead ends nowadays.
Right.
Books just kind of end. Characters rarely die. And when they do, for the perfect example is like, you know, Nightcrawler dies for one of the most beautiful ways in Messiah Complex way back in the day, like 7 years ago or something. And, He dies, and it's very noble, and it, like, breaks your heart. Like, Nightcrawler is one of my favorite characters, and so the fact that he sacrificed himself for something that he believed would save the world because he believed in Hope Summers so much that he was willing to die for her, and then he does, it was such an amazing story, and I was like, good. Like, what a way to do a huge character death and make it really, really important. And not 2 or 3 years later, you know, he's back in Amazing X-Men, because the X-Men go to heaven, I guess, and they have to fight the Pirate Devil, which is also Nightcrawler's dad. So the X-Men, you know, it's all over with that. And those seem to be the only examples I'm coming up with. But you know, Gwen Stacy coming back to life, it was like kind of a big thing. You know, she came back to life and then like ended up having kids with Harry Osborn, and that's a whole thing that Marvel really doesn't like to touch anymore.
I think you mean Norman Osborn.
Or Norman Osborn, I'm sorry. Yeah. Which is even creepier.
The old one.
Yeah, the old guy. And you know, so it's not just X-Men. It is a lot of superheroes. And of course, we've got three people that are all Marvel-leaning, so we probably don't know too much about the DC side of continuity things, but that's what Infinite Crisis was, right? Like, Barry Allen undid all of the terrible events by running around the Earth and, like, reversing time or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what New 52 was, like, that whole... Yeah. That was all that was all retcons and reboots and everything.
Right. And that's the thing about retcons, though, because they're implying that there is one singular continuity.
Yeah.
And if you get away from that idea, then these quote-unquote retcons just become new stories.
Right, exactly.
But we want to hold on for some reason that we have this modern take of, like, we want to hold on to one single continuity, except for when we don't. Like Old Man Logan or Old Man Hawkeye. You know, when we want these cool little extra universal things that happened. You know, that's a whole other thing.
That's the beauty of the multiverse, though. Like, the ability to do this weird non-traditional story with this character and be like, ah, it's cool, this is in the 915 universe or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is why you should all read Exiles, because that's what the whole series is about. Just saying.
My favorite
I'm
example.
I'm looking it up right now, Mike. I'm going to call you and tell you how much I hated it.
So excited. The first arc is going to make you furious, Brian. So, sorry, Kate, go ahead.
Well, my favorite recent example was that 2015 Marvel in the Uncanny Avengers run from 2015, which was very nice and you should go read if you can. But they made it so they did a retcon so that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver aren't mutants because Marvel wants them in their movies. Yeah. And they can't be mutants in the movies, so they're like, and like legally they can have them as long as they don't use their X-Men names or whatever, so they're like, so like originally they had the Golden Age heroes Miss America and the Wizard were parents, right? And then for all our lives, like, they've been Dad Nito and Magda, right?
Yeah.
And so then they get all that weird twincest storylines, and you're like, ugh. And then they, so in Uncanny Avengers, they fixed that and fixed their movie problems, because this was right around when they were announcing that they were going to be in the movies for the first time. And so then they're like, actually, they're like adoptive parents, Django and Maria Maximoff have been their parents all along, they're actually failed experiments of the High Evolutionary, not mutants. And so they're not really twins. They're not, there's no Dad Nito. They're not X-Men. They're not, like, all that stuff gets undone. But it's like, so it's, it is a retcon in that it's changing the past, but, like, it does it within the story where it's revealed to them, like, oh, I didn't know this about myself. And they, like, go and, like, all this stuff. Yeah. But yeah, that's how Marvel did it. So they're like, now we can use them and it makes sense.
See, that's funny though, because they just retconned that again.
Yeah, I know.
In X-Men Grand Design, right?
They have many parents.
Yeah, in X-Men Grand Design, Ed Piskor, he's writing, I think, the official, like, history of Marvel's X-Men at this point,
mm-hmm.
In this series. And one of the big main points is about how Magneto disappears in the 60s, and he, or 70s or whatever, and he goes and lives on this mountaintop with this woman Magda, and they have kids, and it ends up being Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, if I'm not mistaken. So it's,
yeah, I mean, it's
okay. I guess they're back to being mutants.
In, what was it, Days of Future Past, Quicksilver, it's hinted repeatedly that Magneto's his dad, like, implied over and over, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, who knows, but that was, I thought, a big one, when they're like, oh, we went a little too weird on the twin thing, and, like, yeah.
Right, you know, right. Sometimes a family is two kids, they're six maybe parents, and the High Evolutionary, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
So, I guess the question is, how do you feel about retcons then? You know, I mean, if you're reading a comic and the storyline, like, you know, retcon something that you know about this character and have known for a while about this character, how do you take it? Do you mind? Do you just kind of roll with it? I mean, I have thoughts, but I'll let you guys start.
My hot take is that I kind of like retcons.
Yeah.
Frequently, things get so bogged down in continuity that it's super refreshing to see what people can come up with once we break the shackles of continuity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially as a longtime Star Wars fan, and, you know, feel free to send any hate mail to our email, and Michael sent it on to me. But
yeah,
you know, I loved the expanded universe, but it was such a freaking bloated mess towards the end. Like, that's why the story Kate was talking about earlier was about Cade Skywalker, Luke Skywalker's distant descendant, because every fucking minute of Luke Skywalker's life had already been written. Like,
right.
there was no room left in the timeline to write about the main Star Wars characters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Like, all that crap had to go. And now we can start getting cool comics, like the Star Wars comics I'm reading.
Yeah, I feel like the same way, especially since you frequently get these when they've gotten bogged down and dead-ended, and so you get them when you're getting kind of not loving what's happening already, like it's gotten boring or stale or whatever, and that's when they do a retcon. The other thing, I guess the big thing for me, is I am not someone who's been reading comics since like the 80s or 90s. I started in the 2000s, and so a lot of retcons are where I jumped on, because they make these huge series like Batman into accessible things when you go in. Start like New 52 is technically a retcon, right? And that's when I started reading Batman. And you could jump in at that point and be like an actual jumping in on point to that universe, because they had reset everything, which makes it a lot easier and more interesting than trying to just have Wikipedia in one hand and your comic in the other, going, ah.
Yeah.
So.
But that's our go-to sage advice, is that when you're reading comics, you don't know something, just look it up on Wikipedia.
I mean, it's true, but also.
But in a perfect world, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think they're good for that. They're great when they modernize things that were sexist or racist or any of the other ists, you know, because there's definitely like, we know better now, let's fix this kind of moments in comics.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually read through a retcon, though, if we're being honest. Like, I don't read that many capes. I think all the retcons, when I was brainstorming this before, are things that I jumped on at the retcon because it made it a good jumping on point versus... Yeah. Which I think is also one of the big reasons they do it, is to get new readers to come on board. But I don't think I've ever read through one.
Some of it is like, if you go back and read an old comic, you know, like, and it's wildly different, but it's about the same character that you're reading about right now. You know, how do you feel about something like that, where you're like, oh, I read this old comic and it turns out that, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver is their mom and dad were actually Miss America and the Wizard, why do they keep saying that Magneto is their dad?
Yeah.
You know, it can be confusing, but I guess if you're fine to roll with it and understand, like, that these things have been retconned or been changed, I mean, I guess maybe it's not an issue. I don't think we see them that often nowadays, but then again, I don't think I'm reading enough Cape books to be able to speak to it well enough. I think Charles Xavier being dead and then fucking Red Skull sealing his brain, that was the most ridiculous thing that happened. I don't know if that's a retcon. Like, the big huge spoiler of Astonishing X-Men, spoilers for Astonishing X-Men that's coming out by now by Charles Soule, is that Charles Xavier never died.
That's even what I mean. Like, we got to bring everybody like back. It's comics.
The last 3 or 4 years fucking fighting wars because Charles Xavier died.
JK, and then it turns out maybe, back.
By the way, he's been in like this astral plane the whole time. Mm-hmm. But we don't really know if that's true yet. The series isn't over. We've seen some stuff. We don't know what's actually true until the end. So, I mean, that's the thing. I just roll with them because at this point I've read so many comics where retcons have happened. That it's kind of like, all right, I guess this is how we do things. Cyclops didn't actually die to save all the mutants. He just got sucked into an alien spaceship.
I just wasted my money on that miniseries.
Joss Whedon just decided that he was in an alien spaceship the whole time.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, like, you can be mad about it if you want, but the comic is being retconned whether you're happy or not.
Yeah.
So, like, right, if you want to keep reading it, keep reading it. And if the retcon is too much for you, then you can stop pulling it. Like,
yeah, and the people will say things, like, you see online a lot of, like, oh, they ruined this comic. And I'm like, the old material still exists. It doesn't change it at all. It changes what's going forward.
I had agents from Disney burst into my house and burn my old Star Wars books. But yeah, I think that was more happen. Something that like I had done wrong. I don't think that was Disney. Like, I deserved that.
So, Kate, you bring up a good point, though, because people do get upset about this stuff, and they argue. And I think on this show, for the most part, we're pretty level-headed individuals, and we kind of roll with the punches because that's what comics is. It's better to have comic books that are make you a little frustrated but you can deal with then have no comics at all, I think.
Yep.
But are there times that you think that you could be legitimately mad at something that is retconned?
I think stuff like what you're talking about with Nightcrawler and stuff like that, where a character has this beautiful, very satisfying character death that then gets wiped out by something further down the line. Like, it's mm-hmm. one thing if like you said, the X-Men, like, go to the afterlife and pull him back out. Like, I don't really see that as a retcon necessarily. But, like, sure. The JK Xavier was actually alive this whole time stuff. Like, if he had had, like, a really satisfying death and then that just gets wiped out by he actually didn't sacrifice himself at all. I can understand people's grievances with stuff like that.
Sure.
I think they're both retcons. They're just different types. So you're thinking about, like, when you're wiping something out, that's like a subtraction type. But you can also do addition type where it's like, oh, actually they were in this place or they were like blah, 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 and they go and get them.
It was a mirror image the whole time.
Right, that kind. So it's just a different type of retconning.
That's true.
Or just an alteration type is another common one where they're just like, oh, this is this now.
Uh-huh.
Versus I think the most grievous and the things that get the biggest like blow pushback, I think, are what you were talking about, like the subtraction where they're like, that never happened at all.
It was actually a dream.
Oh, God, right? Rebirth?
Yeah. So, like, okay, yeah. See, and this is, like, one of the biggest, the hottest arguments that people have, and Marvel has addressed it multiple times with the X-Men. Was it during Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men? Magneto becomes this very, 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 very bad guy. Like, we knew that Magneto was kind of a bad guy. It turns out that he's a terrible, awful, like, human piece of garbage who will just maliciously kill people. And now when you think about Magneto, I don't think that his intention is ever to be like, we need to destroy all of humans. But in Grant Morrison's story, he goes fucking crazy and just starts killing people. And so Marvel ends up retconning that later and saying, no, 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 it wasn't actually Magneto. It was this other character disguised as Magneto, you see? and it was understandable because the character they talk about, his name is Zorn, he has this ability where he can kind of do anything. He's like this, Omega God-tier character. So they could justify and say, no, 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 it actually was Zorn. he just put on this fake face and he looked like Magneto and talked like Magneto and acted like Magneto, but he wasn't actually a Magneto. He was Zorn. And I remember I've seen forum posts about this that are just yelling and screaming to no end about it, because they didn't want Magneto to be this super awful, terrible, like black and white killer. Instead, they wanted him to still be the grayish, you know,
yeah,
I'm a bad guy, but not like a super bad guy character, which has always been his character.
He's lawful evil. He's not chaotic evil.
Exactly, exactly. So it's, you know, these things exist, and I understand people getting mad about it, but I remember being very frustrated by it, but I think as I've gotten older and matured, I realized that comic books are mostly like a fine bullshit. Cheese. Yeah. As I've become this big, stinking, smelly piece of fucking moldy garbage that people like, I've realized that it's okay.
Mike Rappin is an acquired taste.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I mean, retcons exist. It's a thing as a part of comics. So I guess, and so on the whole, I think it sounds like we've learned to deal with them. Is that what it is?
I mean, there's such a standard part of comics that you'd kind of have to. If you're going to read Capes, you're going to come across it. Like, it's especially since they so often now seem to do like them with line-wide resets versus like individual things.
Yeah,
so, sure. I mean, like, that's the running joke of comics, right? No character's really dead.
Except Uncle Ben.
Yeah, right?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Uncle Ben has died over and over again in different ways, but he's always dead.
He's pretty much always dead.
Aquaman's kid stays dead, too.
It's actually not true. There is an Uncle Ben who's alive in Spider-Verse. But that's a different universe.
I mean, okay, like, I reject that retcon.
I thought there was a universe where Uncle Ben became Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Spider-Ben.
Okay, okay. Yeah, okay. Oh, boy. Let's just talk about wacky multiverse things. Okay, speaking of multiverse, you should all read this book called Exiles that I keep plugging.
It's true. I've actually read all 16 volumes since Mike last mentioned it. And it's actually pretty good. So.
Wait, yeah, 16 thanks, volumes or issues?
Volumes.
Holy crap, Mike.
Yeah, no.
It's actually, I think it might be more than that. Nope, it's exactly 16. I have them all sitting on my shelf next to me.
On this shelf that is groaning under the weight.
Right?
No joke, that the shelf itself is literally bending. So, and it's funny because I came across that book in a time when I was really just trying to read anything I could get my hands on. Because I was like, hey, you know what? I have a little bit of money. Why don't I spend more than I have and buy all these comics?
Who needs food?
And so I did. Because I thought, you know, I was buying them on discount comic book service, and I was like, oh yeah, these are only like $12 trades that are normally $15. Wow, what a saving. And then I was fucking buying like 10 of them at a time, and I was like, where'd all my money go? And so I bought the first 4 volumes without knowing anything about the series. I devoured them and bought the next 8, and then was buying them as they came out because it was still an ongoing book at the time because I was only reading trades. It was a wild time. And, so go read that series because someone else has to appreciate it. I mean, if it ran for 16 volumes, you got to think some people did. But yeah, it's a good book. And it's all about alternate universes. That's what I love about it. So, okay. Let's, I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say about retcons. I don't know about you guys. Are there any like final thoughts you have about them?
Yeah. The one caveat I want to get into is... if you're retconning a character, like redoing their origins,
mm-hmm.
and again, all hate mail can be addressed to IRCB@destroythesybe.org, and then Michael pass it to me. But yeah. It is perfectly fine for a white character to be retconned as a person of color, or a straight character to be retconned as a gay character, whatever. But it's not okay to go the other way. You can't take like a black character and retcon them as a white guy, because there is so precious little representation in comic books right now. Mm-hmm. And it is getting better. Like over the years it has certainly improved. But to take one of like the 9 main black characters in Marvel, say, and retcon them into a white guy is, you know, it's a 12% decrease.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
So if that upsets you, feel free to at me on Twitter or something, we can talk about it. But that's just something that's true. Like, you can't be wiping out diversity with these retcons.
Right. Yep. I agree.
Agreed.
I mean, speaking of that, like, that's... I honestly love the Iceman series so much more because of the whole retcon of Bobby Drake being gay. It totally works for the character. It makes everything that he does and the goofiness that he does, like, or that he is, and he says to people and stuff, makes it all make sense. It's so great. Cena Grace has been is doing a fantastic job on that.
Yeah, that's been a great series.
Yeah, okay, well, I guess we can wrap up, and you guys can just, you know, send us emails and your thoughts and all that stuff. As always, where can people find you guys on the internet, Brian?
You can find me on Twitter. I am at BrianHead, and given recent events, I should stress that I am not the ski resort in Utah. I am the person at BrianHead.
Okay. What about you, Kate?
I'm at Kate Scotchless.
Cool, and I'm at Mike Rappin on Twitter. You can follow the show at IRCB Podcast, where we retweet all sorts of stuff at all hours of the day and night. And we post polls every Friday, such as this week's poll, who is the fieriest? And the results that we are seeing right now may surprise you.
You clickbait trash.
Yeah, I was gonna say. if you want some less tempting things to look up, you can always check out our Goodreads group. We're not going to try and lure you in or anything, but you should check it out anyways.
You won't believe what we're talking about on the Goodreads group this week.
Damn it, Mike.
Comment number 37 may surprise you.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, it is a cool community full of cool people where we talk about the show, we talk about comics, we have a monthly discussion. It's good stuff. Just get in there, check it out, post a comment, we'll talk to you. It's great.
My favorite thing that I saw this week, actually, was I think Wayland posted, he was referring to Old Man Logan by calling him, I can't believe it's not Logan. That's my favorite. That's my favorite thing in the entire world.
It's so perfect.
You can email us other dairy-themed names for comic book characters at ircbpodcast.com.
Yeah.
You can also visit us at our website, ircbpodcast.com. It's the official place to go for all your IRCB podcast needs.
And please rate, subscribe, and tell your friends about us, whatever podcatcher you're on, wherever you are. That helps us out a lot. You can also email the show at ircb@destroythesybe.org. Spelled like destroy the cyborg, but with a dot. Please reach out. We love talking to you. And Mike's real lonely, so, you know, just send him some love.
Send me some recipes. That's apparently something that we haven't gotten yet. But boy, we are looking for some. Infinity Shred does all the music for the show. They're the absolute best band in the universe. Xander, he's a fun guy. He's just a fun guy. He also edits the show. So if send us an email saying thank you, Xander, because I think he would really appreciate it. Finally, I want to say thank you for listening. And until next week and next time, my friends, we will check you mostly later on the down the road next week.
Huh?
Xander didn't think that I would say that, and I fucking did. So let me actually record a proper ending. Until next week and next time, thank you so much for listening. In case he actually wants to put a fucking ending in. He told me, he's like, he sent that to me in a Telegram chat, and he was like, because he's giving me shit about, I don't know how to end the show.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, it sounds like you're saying something like this. He literally wrote that out, and I was like, Xander, I'm going to say that on the show, and he's like, you fucking won't.
Next time, just open the show with just like, what's up, guys? It's your boy, Mike Rappin, coming at you.
Smash that like button.
Think I deserve it? Please like and subscribe. Click the bell icon for notifications.
Oh my god. Until next week and next time, my friends, we will check you mostly later on down the road next week. That's going to be the sign off every week. I'm going to memorize it.
'Cause now that it's wintertime again, I'm getting a lot of notifications for the Brianhead Ski Resort on Twitter again.
That's like my favorite thing to Google every once in a while.
I got somebody tweeted something out, Ski Utah, tweeted something out that got 8 retweets and 44 likes.
Nice.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but I did get notified about every single one of them.
Oh my god. So they're accidentally using your Twitter handle?
They tagged me in it, yeah.
That's hilarious.
And I didn't have the heart to tell them, but I did reblog, or I did retweet it. So. Another guy just posted like an hour ago, hit me up if you want to stay in a cabin next weekend at Brian Head. And I'm just debating, so like, do I just message him and be like, hey, where's the cabin?
Like, See, well, the funniest thing about that is, like, when they type at Brian Head, they see the name, not a ski resort, right?
Yeah.
As the first, like, when you, because it comes up and it's a picture of your fucking face, right?
Yeah.
This is the best part about it.
Well, this is hilarious, and I did not know anything about it.
The worst part, though, is, like, the guy who posted that tweet appears to fucking suck from, like, what I see on his Twitter feed. Like,
great.
One day ago, he just tweeted, Swervo.
I get it. He's got, like, a hip teen, you know, Twitter from, it's weird trash Twitter. And he's probably got, like, 10,000 followers and... He retweets something from brands. I just read an article on BuzzFeed News about this. So it's what the hip young teens are doing in trash tweet decks or something. I don't know.
He posted itching to get another tat and then followed it up with appointment set.
And nice.
Itching to get another tat got 3 retweets. Oh, and I'm like, I'm fucking furious about that right now. You're right, though. He has 933 followers.
Nice. He probably sells weed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like it.
This is my favorite thing. Brian, like, I honestly think, like, you could start, like, a Tumblr blog that only posts during the winter months that is just, like, going into excruciating detail trying to analyze how this all came together. When someone mentions you on Twitter like that.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite was that period of time where the actual Brian Head Ski Resort Twitter account was, like, liking a bunch of my tweets.
What?
Dude, have they offered to, like, buy your Twitter handle yet?
No.
Okay.
I think, I don't
think... They should.
Maybe it's not that selling. Ski resort.
I mean, I know, that's the thing. I would love to just see how high the number would get.
Yeah.
Because I bet you they would start with, like, $500, and they'd cap at, like, $3,000. That's my guess.
Yeah. I don't know. That just cracks me up.
It's fantastic. I do, like, every once in a while I'll see you tweet something, and I'll be reminded of this, and then just do, like, a general Twitter search for at Brian Head, and it's great, because sometimes it's usually, like, us talking to you, and then it's just, like, some random person being, like, having a great time at Brian Head with, like, 40 hashtags on it.
Yeah, I like a picture of them in the snow or something.
Yeah, it's like, Brian's got a really interesting social life that I don't know about.